commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode number 16.
Now managed by Mutant Space Spaghetti.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And this episode is... I don't even know what the hell we're doing in this episode. What are we doing?
We're doing some newsy-type stuffages. And then our main segment, well, main-ish segment, will be on e-books and e-reading.
Oh, it's written down right here. That might help.
It is. Yeah, I know. For the first time, you're the one that actually needs the agenda, not me.
I know. I should probably learn how to read.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so first up in the news is really big news, right?
Well, it's slightly large news.
I think it's big freaking news. Come on.
All right, it's relatively large. It's about 450,000 copies large.
Yes. Susan Collins, who is the author of the Hunger Games trilogy, which I haven't read, but it doesn't really matter because it's really big and most people have heard of it. It was the last book in the series, Mockingjay, was released on August 24th, and it has since reached, as of September 2nd, 450,000 copies sold.
Yep, that's approximately 45,000 books sold per day, although that statistic doesn't seem right, but... we didn't actually do the math ourselves. No, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing that in literally, 8 days, 10 days, that it's sold such a huge amount.
It's 9 days, actually.
9 days?
They can't do math.
It's freaking insane.
They can't do math.
That's okay. Neither can we. So it doesn't really matter.
I was looking at that and I was like, there are not 32 days in August.
Yeah.
I was like, did they change it? Was this like a August leap year? Like every 1,000 years, they just add an extra day to August? Like, no.
It's just I'm sure that's exactly what happened. Okay. But anyway, so the because of the fact that it, this book is doing so well and the previous sales, they're already giving her a second printing.
Yep.
The entire series, I imagine. And meanwhile, they've sold the film rights for the series. They were purchased by Lionsgate Films. So we should be seeing some pretty spiffy young adult science fiction films.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Or they'll be crap.
I mean, it's kind of interesting that in terms of youth movies, fantasy films are way up there, but there's not a lot of science fiction for kids.
This is true. This is true.
In books or film, which, you know, I'm still kind of flummoxed by the disparity between fantasy and science fiction for kids, because you know, I'm trying to get my kids into science fiction, and now I'm going to have to buy them this series. So
yeah, and that'll be good. And just to clarify, the second printing is just for this book.
Oh, just for this book.
Just this book, and it's something like 400,000 extra copies.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, just in 9 days to sell 450,000 copies, that's insanity.
That is complete insanity. So, good on her. Go Suzanne Collins.
Definitely.
Totally.
It's awesome. Well, there is another Collins in town.
Oh.
Awesome. That's a good segue.
Good segue.
Yeah. HarperCollins has actually gone and created a new global science fiction imprint that they're calling Harper Voyager, which I guess the basic idea is they took EOS, which was an imprint of theirs, and they've now sort of changed the name to Harper Voyage and then merged it with the other Voyager things, the other Voyager imprints in Australia, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. So now all three are like going to share the books are, I don't know how it's going to work, but basically,
well, yeah,
US
I mean,
books will be available there, and their books will be available here, and it'll all cross pollinate, yes. I guess.
Cross pollinate. That is huge news, because, I mean, very often you have books that aren't available on one side of the pond or the other, at least not at the same time. So now, presumably, they'll all be released in fairly close succession, I would imagine.
I'd hope so.
I hope. That would be awesome. Because I always hate when there's a book that gets released in the United Kingdom and I sit there going, do-do-do. Granted, everybody in Britain says that about our television, too, so whatever. I guess we're cooler than they are.
Gotta pay for the television. You can't get it free. Sorry.
But the big thing is that it's going to open up books, you know, open the door on a global scale for authors in other countries to go to the U.S. market particularly. So
yeah.
That's a very, very good thing.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with that.
Yeah, we might get something outside of a United States sphere.
Yeah, but it'll still be white.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I wonder if they have imprints with non-traditionally considered Western countries.
African markets and whatnot. And...
Yeah, like African markets, India, the Caribbean, maybe South America.
I don't know.
I'd imagine some of those are not. They don't write in English, so, or at least not regularly. So I mean, I guess maybe this makes more sense when it's like Australia and the United Kingdom, since there are no second languages really there, not that are dominant anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
hopefully someone will start printing more non-Western books.
Well, I hope so. I'm hoping so. That would be really nice. But
it would be nice.
Anywho. Why don't you tell them our next big news?
The next big news comes in the movie sphere, moving away from books. So we mentioned this as a possibility a few episodes ago, and we're very excited. There you go.
Oh, well, wait, no, we didn't mention
it. No, we didn't mention it in number five, but in episode number five, Duke had the pleasure of interviewing the guys behind the Universal Dead web series, which was absolutely excellent. The three episodes that they released were great and left us at a bit of a cliffhanger because they have officially signed with Paramount Studios to release a full-length film version of Universal Dead.
Yep.
And it apparently is scheduled for release in 2011, so a fairly quick production schedule. And it will be in 3D.
Yes. They're marketing it as 3D, but I did ask, I believe it was Kelly Parks, I did ask him by email if it would be in 2D, and he said that it would be. So for those of you that hate 3D, like I do, you will be able to see it in 2D. So.
Well, I can't see it in 3D anyway.
Yeah. I asked him, because 3D movies actually kind of give me a little bit of a headache, and so it was like, I can't see your movie. If it's in 3D, it'll make me not happy.
Yeah, so that's... congratulations to Kelly Parks et al. That's absolutely excellent news. And wow, we got to interview them. So aren't we spiffy?
Well, you didn't.
I didn't.
Adam and I did. And by the way, I am going to take credit for discovering them.
Of course you are.
Yeah, even though they were already kind of somebody before us, but it doesn't really matter. We discovered them. We are responsible for discovering these guys.
Yeah, I'm sure that the only reason they got this deal was because they were on the Skippy and VFT show.
Episode number five when nobody even knew we existed. Yeah. Exactly. Somebody was listening. That's just what happened.
Somebody was listening. Somebody important somewhere was listening.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with Comic-Con at all.
No. Or the fact that it was a great web series, you know, that had some big names in it. It had nothing to do with any of that, and it's all because of Skippy and VFT. So they should thank us.
I know, we should get a movie credit.
They should dedicate the movie, exactly.
I hope so. That would be so awesome if we got like some sort of footnote at the end of the credits.
That would be awesome, but somehow I don't think that's going to happen.
Probably not. The evil corporations won't put it in there. They could just put it as like a little tiny thing at like the very end of the credits, like where they put all the stuff they don't have time to show you.
Totally.
You know, that way no one would see us.
Yeah, I'm hugely excited about this because I really loved where they took the show. I love that what seemed at first to be kind of, you know, a fantasy-based zombie series ended up being this like pseudo science fiction Cthulhu-esque.
Yeah.
I love that twist, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how they flesh out the story. So.
Yeah, it'll be really fascinating. And then, you know, they'll get a bigger budget and everything, so it'll be really cool.
Yes, I wonder who's going to star in it. I can't wait to start, like, you know, putting out the news, you know. This week in the news, somebody big is starring in Universal Dead.
Yeah, but it's not...
I have a feeling that it won't be the original cast.
See, now you're just reminding me of the last thing we have to talk about.
I know. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. So, guys, this is the deal. Apparently, some studio who's stupid decided that Battleship would be a great idea for a movie. Yeah. Battleship, the board game. You know, like...
The Hasbro board game. Yeah.
Nobody who is now 16 has ever played, but who all us old people did play it. It's now being made into a movie, and that was announced like in December, right? But as if that was not bad enough, because it's already stupid, just the idea of let's take a board game that has no basic plot other than kill the other guy. Let's now make it even more. And here's the deal. The new Battleship movie is going to be about aliens invading Earth.
Yep, it will be an epic battle between aliens and battleships.
Yes, aliens and battleships. And I think... Somewhere along the way...
I'm just picturing an alien saying, you sunk my battleship.
I think somebody made a joke or it was a serious thing where giant red things would descend from the sky and destroy the ships, but I hope that's not one of the movie references they made, because that's really awful.
giant red pylons.
Boom!
Oh, this is genius. I'm sure, you know, I have a feeling there maybe it'll be like red bombs or something. It won't be, you know, quite as, you know, blatant as giant red pylons, but maybe the aliens will be red. Who knows? But I don't know. I think it's, there is some hope to this because I got to say a little bit of hope, at least. We'll get to why there's no hope in a minute, but the reason there is some hope is because, first off, it's getting directed by Peter Berg, who I actually have a lot of respect for. I've enjoyed
his film. Used to until this.
Well, okay, yeah. Granted, he's very interested in, I guess you could say, authenticity.
Wait, what?
Well, no. Okay, he's doing an alien movie with a battleship. Granted, okay, but this is also a guy who's directed some very serious films. Granted, he also did Hancock, but... You know, this is
what
he
serious
did,
films has he done?
The Kingdom was
blah.
But still, you know, he's got experience doing, and Friday Night Lights, very serious film.
That was boring.
I thought it was a great film, so whatever.
I know, but I don't watch anything but science fiction fantasy, so.
Wonderland, the rundown, sorry, I'm not exactly serious, but awesome, so whatever.
It was fun.
But he's got some experience doing battle scenes from The Kingdom and everything, so, you know, there might be good things coming out of Peter Berg on that side. Plus, he wants to go with the feel of, a similar feel to District 9.
Keep trying to butter them up with this, it's not going to work.
Oh yeah, shut up. What? This is what is getting talked about in terms of the Battleship film.
I know, but
it's so hard to go, "Oh, but it's going to feel like District 9. Oh, but the guy's got some, you know, battle cred, you know, realistic battle cred from his other films." But it's still, when it comes right down to it, it's a freaking battleship movie with aliens. So
Yes, but comparing it to District 9 is offensive.
It's not yet. We'll see. It might be offensive once it comes out, but going with it as not a premise, but a feel for the film, that's not offensive. Because at least he's not going for, I'm trying to make it feel like a Hasbro game, a la G.I. Joe.
Couldn't they, but why couldn't
Because that would just make me die a little inside.
Couldn't they make it a contemporary sea-based war movie?
That's kind of what he's doing.
No. Aliens. No. throwing that out. Okay, no, that's not contemporary. There are no aliens we know of. Okay.
But no, that's exactly what he's doing. He's making a contemporary naval battle movie.
No, what he's
with
not
aliens.
How do you
and,
fight aliens with naval battles? They're from space.
Well, here's the thing: is that the direct quote from an old article, granted, but he's trying to make these aliens not incomprehensible. Their technology is supposed to be relatable. It's not going to be far out and unbeatable, and so it will. It'll feel like a contemporary battle thing, but with granted against aliens.
Even so, there's no logical reason why an alien species from off-planet would come and then wage a naval battle with us. This is absurd. They're going to come all this way and they're going to go, by the way, we're going to put boats in the water and then fight you instead of just bombing all your boats from space with
because
orbital missiles.
Because we like boats.
Anyway, if that wasn't bad enough,
if that wasn't
wait
bad
till
enough,
the cast.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait. No. Let's start first, okay? Let's start with what Berg thought he was going to do, which is he said specifically in some interview someplace, I don't know where, that he wanted to copy J.J. Abrams in finding not necessarily popular actors.
Lesser known. Yeah.
Lesser known actors to play the roles, right? And I guess for everyone who actually likes Star Trek, I guess that fairly worked. I mean, I liked Quinto, who was Spock, but everyone else I just hated. Well, and Bones. Bones and Spock, pretty much it.
And Scotty. Sorry.
Oh, and Scotty. Yes. I'm sorry.
Freaking amazing. Yeah.
Three people out of, like, the 12
whatever.
Characters. But anyway, so that was his point. That was what he said he was trying to do. So...
Yes. So wait, he wait, almost no, no. got there. No. We got to. I'm doing the caveat. He almost got there.
No, he didn't even get close.
No, he did because he's casting Alexander Skarsgård, who granted has gotten a lot of fame recently from.
Yeah, we don't care.
True Blood. No,
he's canceled out by the black sheep in the family.
That's racist. All right. Just kidding. I'm kidding. And then he's casting Taylor Kitsch, who he's already worked with, believe, was he in Friday Night Lights? On the television show Friday Night Lights. And then he played Gambit on Wolverine. So not a guy who's been in a lot. He's also actually playing John Carter from John Carter of Mars coming up. So,
well, that's nice.
He's an up-and-coming actor, but he's still not a huge name. So, yeah, I mean, they've got these two people that aren't big, but... they've got some chops.
No. It doesn't matter how... No, you cannot ruin this. I have to do this, okay? It does not matter if he got Robert Duvall and Meryl Streep to sit alongside this person. There's nothing that can make this right, okay? The other main person who is acting in this movie is none other than... Rihanna, who is not only not even an actor, she's never acted in anything other than Saturday Night Live, as far as I can tell. And Saturday Night Live is not acting. Okay, that no. is playing yeah. house when you're 12. And she is in this movie as a main character.
I don't get it at all. I mean, yeah, maybe if she wants to move into acting, she's got to start somewhere. But yeah. Why Peter Berg decided, oh, yeah, I'm going to take a shot on Rihanna for a movie that already sounds patently ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's like,
not to mention
I know.
Who she plays. She plays a military person.
And she looks ridiculous.
Well, she's I think someone else pointed out, she doesn't have an appropriate military haircut. Which is, you know, it's something to nitpick, but the fact is that they're planning to shoot this on an actual...
They are shooting it on an actual Navy
thing.
Boat.
Yeah, so you would think, like, this is a boat that has actual military people on it, so maybe they would say, yeah, just so you know, that's not accurate. Like, I don't want to be rude, but, like, you should learn, like, I'm just saying...
But you might want to cut your hair, because...
Yeah, that's a requirement. Like, I know you're a pop star, and you got to keep, like, the do, but... This isn't cool.
Yeah. See, the problem is that her hair touches her ears, and that's like a big faux pas in the military. So
yeah.
Anyway. I don't know if anybody else knows that, but I know that. So, and that's actually the only thing really wrong with the haircut.
See, I would be almost okay if they were on a cruise ship and she was playing the entertainment.
It would be like, what's the Steven Seagal movie? She jumps out of a cake. On a
battleship. And then sings a ditty.
Yeah.
Because at least she would be playing something that is close to what she is. See, like, I wrote down in the show notes, and I think this is very, very poignant, is whenever you see Puff Daddy playing in any sort of a movie, he gets to play himself. And you know who that person is? He plays a jerk. And he's really good at it because that's who he is. So why would you cast her as something that, A, she's clearly not qualified to play, that you're not even... Oh, it's just... It's mind-bogglingly idiotic. I mean, this is...
It really is.
And this is what, when we talked about In the Name of the King last week, like... At least the cast for In the Name of the King was a good cast.
Right, it almost made sense, and not really, but almost.
At least the actors they chose were people who were real actors.
If they'd collected those actors for any other film, it might have actually been good.
Exactly. And here you have what could be just a really good sea-based war movie, and now they're going to make it the most idiotic... Like War of the Worlds meets Voyage Under the Sea.
Oh, it's War of the Worlds meets the Steven Seagal movie.
And Voyage Under the Sea.
And Voyage, yeah. You sunk my battleship.
They better not. If that's in the movie, I will walk out.
Oh, no, it's going to be in the movie. Well, you know what's interesting is they've said that there will be references to the game for people who are intelligent enough and have played the game to catch them. So...
Well, that one's too obvious, then.
That one is really obvious, but I'm sorry. It's going to be in there. You cannot make a battleship movie and not have that line in it. You just can't.
It'll be okay if the line is said because two characters are playing battleship.
That would be hilarious.
Because then I would be okay. Like, oh, they're right. Playing then battleship, and then he says
like,
it.
Super cheesy, because, yeah, that would be...
Yeah, well, that would be that super cheesy.
Really awful.
Ugh.
I suppose I could see a captain being, like, snarky and being like, you sunk my battleship. But
No,
I don't even think that works. No.
There is no captain with any integrity who would say that.
I wonder if they'll start saying things like... G4. F2.
Quadrant F4.
And then you're going to have like the ensigns up there going, it's a hit.
See, and the problem is, you know, like somebody's going, you know, you got a hit like that in any other context, that would not be corny and ridiculous, but it's battleship. Oh, okay, so yeah. I think the point is gotta cry. This is gonna be the most awful thing ever made, possible, in the last year and a half.
Or slightly awesome. It could go either way.
No, it's not gonna be awesome. No. This will make the Expendables look like a f***ing masterpiece.
What's kind of crazy, meanwhile, is that they've got a ginormous budget, so I have a feeling it's gonna totally bomb.
The budget is it's 99% CG. It's not for
they hired. $200 million for the film.
Yeah, $199 million of that's just for the special effects. And I guarantee you most of them are going to be to make Rihanna do things that she's incapable of actually doing.
And give her a military haircut.
Clip it and post it. Oh, God.
Yes. Oh, Hollywood, how we love you.
No. Ugh. All right, so we're going to come right back with our discussion of ebooks.
Lord knows where it takes us.
Yeah, I think you're calling it Savior or Curse, aren't we? Is that what we're calling it?
Savior or Curse, yes.
Yeah.
Although that's a kind of a faulty parallel, so maybe we might want to name it something else.
No. It's a perfectly acceptable parallel.
All right.
Well, we'll be right back. The music, which will hopefully reset your brain. After that. And we're back with our main segment, which is, as we indicated before, it's ebooks, savior or curse. This is kind of prompted by a whole lot of stuff that's been going on over the last few months, and then obviously over the last couple of years with ebooks, since ebooks have become, I guess you could safely say they become a permanent fixture of our society. They're not going anywhere. In fact, they just seem to be going up, which I guess kind of goes against what everybody predicted.
Basically.
Even myself, I think I got this wrong. I didn't think ebooks were going to be this popular, but...
I know I didn't, only because I'm waiting until they have, you know, paper, like the electronic paper.
So. They have it already.
Well, yeah, I know, but not in ebook format, so...
Oh, this is true. They just have it for newspaper.
Or e-reader, rather, so, yeah.
They have a newspaper version that you can download the issues in it, and it goes on... It's like a flexible piece of paper, but, yeah. Anyway, so... I guess the whole premise of this is whether or not we think that it is a savior or a curse, and I personally think it is both at the exact same time.
I actually tend to be in agreement with you. I don't know. I don't think it's a curse at all, to be honest. I think it's very good for the publishing industry.
All right, well.
But this was really prompted by the fact that a couple weeks ago, Amazon released its sales numbers, and... They are selling 143 Kindle books for every 100 hardcover books, which, in, you know, as Duke said to me earlier, it's not really that surprising.
No.
That something that's only, you know, on average about $4 compared to $24 is selling more.
No. Ebooks are not about $4. They're more, it depends on the publisher, but they're usually in the $10 to $12 range now.
Are they really even that expensive?
Yeah, if it's accompanying a new release, if it's a new release alongside a new release hardcover, they're usually higher price, and then they drop in price over time based on other versions of the book being released or just time in general. It really depends on the publisher, too.
I had no idea that they were still that expensive. Now this all totally doesn't make sense to me in the slightest.
No, it makes perfect sense.
I don't know. I'm cheap.
Think about it. If you had an option between paying $25 for a hardcover book or $15 for a trade paperback, you're going to buy the trade paperback, most likely.
But if my choice is then between a trade paperback and an ebook, it's, you know, only a couple dollars cheaper.
Well, if it was a trade paperback versus an ebook, it would be a lot cheaper. The prices drop depending on what
it was released as. Right. And that makes sense, but
at least it's supposed to, and I'm sure it doesn't. I mean, like with I'm sure
not with Amazon.
Well, it's not Amazon's fault. It's the publishers. They now set the prices.
I know.
Which is good for publishers and all, but I don't know. That's a whole other complicated issue, because I think they're all kind of idiots at the same time with the whole fit that they had over the prices. I think they all were just idiots over that, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about savior or curse, and you seem to think that it's all good.
I do. I think it is all good. I don't see how it would be bad for the publishing industry. I really don't. So I'm going to let you try to convince me that it might be even the slightest bit cursy.
Okay. All I have to say is one thing. Everyone and their mother releasing absolute filthy garbage in massive quantities, flooding the digital space. And if you don't think that's happening, it already is.
I realize that's happening, but people will still pay for quality. I mean, you run the risk, I guess in that sense, you do run the risk of people going, oh, well, hell, if I can get this for $4 and this for free, I'm going for the thing that's free. But that's not really necessarily true. People are still going to pay for quality. They're still going to pay for the books that, you know, people are recommending to them. And I just don't see the random self-published crap.
Hold on.
To really affect the standard publishing industry that much.
Okay, I'm going to call BS on you.
Why?
Okay. Twilight, Dan Brown, Tyra Banks. Okay, the last of those has not released her book yet, but we all know it's going to be garbage.
Granted.
Anybody
and people read Glenn Beck too, so.
Okay, anybody with sense is going to agree that Twilight is not well written and it's not quality.
No, that's okay. True, but.
Dan Brown is an awful writer. I can't even read the first page of his book without wanting to shoot myself. So it's not so much a quality issue, okay? The people will buy.
Well, yeah,
trash.
I shouldn't say quality. I should say popularity.
Okay, and... well, see, even that's an issue because popularity does play a huge role in what gets purchased.
It does, and
it
I
probably
suppose
shouldn't, but it does.
Well, right, and the publishing houses are still going to be able to throw their money behind the marketing of what they want sold.
Right.
And people are still going to buy it. Whereas your little self-published and noobs will, they don't have that market power. And yeah, it might be free, but it'd be kind of like the Skiffy and Fanny show. I mean, just because we're free doesn't mean people listen to us.
Thanks. Great, and they're making me feel good. No, but you got to remember too that the part of this is a race game. I mean, it's people with the resources now, the monetary resources can do things that normally would have been relegated to a publisher simply because the internet has made that possible. You know, and even so, I mean, they can buy services, they can buy packages. I mean, some of them are absolute garbage, but you can buy packages, and even there are people who have learned how to essentially run the internet. And the problem is yeah, like, okay, maybe some of these people are good writers, but most of them aren't. And
right.
This is the fundamental problem, I think, with ebooks, is that you are going to get a flood of the bad stuff, even among the good self-published stuff. And that's going to make it very difficult, because it's an argument that I hear a lot, is the idea that somehow, well, you could just read an excerpt, and it's like, well, or I could not. Like,
right.
That's not my job as a potential reader. I'm buying a book expecting a minimum standard, and when that standard's not met, I'm pissed because I just wasted my money.
Agreed.
You know?
I honestly do not, when I purchase a book, I do not open it up.
Right. You have a minimum expectation. It's just like
you
go buy a, if you buy a TV in a box, right? Brand new TV. You expect when you get that TV home, it's not going to have a shattered screen.
Agreed.
Or that it's going to turn on, right? You have an expectation of what that product is going to do when you take it out of the box. That
right.
is the same thing with a book. You should not be required to have to do any extra work in order to reasonably expect something. A basic standard that they should be held to. And this is a problem I think that digital publishing has that I don't think is probably addressed right now.
Yeah, probably to an extent, but, you know, I think it's slightly addressed in, maybe not in the entirety of digital publishing, but at least you have, which company is it, Barnes & Noble or Borders, that you can actually, you can check the quality, which granted is not something that mm-hmm. I do, but at least they're willing to let you skim the book before you purchase it.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do that.
I mean, granted, but it is nice that is a possibility with, which one is it, the Nook?
But you can do it with the Amazon, too. Usually, it's really up to whoever's publishing it, if they choose to allow you to read an excerpt.
An excerpt, right. But
yeah.
With the Nook, I believe you can pretty much check
yes.
all the books that are
if
available
you
on
are
the
at
Nook.
A Barnes & Noble, you can actually read any book you have not purchased for an hour for free.
Right, which is... That's one of the things that I really like about the Nook, and I'm kind of disappointed that the other companies aren't following suit, because I mean, maybe it's copyrighted.
maybe.
But I doubt it. Yeah.
No, because you can't copyright that. I don't think you can copyright that.
I don't know. Intellectual property? Who knows?
It's not an intellectual property issue, but yeah. Well, I think the good thing, I mean, I think this is why I think it's both a curse and a savior. I think there are all sorts of really bad problems with ebooks, everything from the way that the various companies are dealing with it, whether it's Amazon and their and the other
proprietary
issues. Yeah, well, and their proprietary format, the DRM nonsense, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
absolutely wretched. And then there are, of course, the publishers who understandably want to have more control over how they're pricing their ebooks, but they're also being morons and thinking that charging $12.99 for an ebook is reasonable. It's
It isn't.
But there are a lot of positives. I mean, there are millions of things we can do with ebooks that you can do with a book, a regular book, sure, but it's so much easier with an ebook. Things like borrowing books from the library. Well, with an ebook, you never have to worry about returning the book on time.
Right,
you just get it on your thing and you're done. Yeah.
Which is great, and that's one of the things that I'm personally really looking for in my e-readers, is the fact that some of the libraries, at least, are letting you rent check the books out.
Yeah. And the great thing is you never have to worry with an ebook whether or not somebody else has already checked it out. It's always available.
Always available, which is absolutely fantastic. And since that's where I get all my books, is at the library, so that's a huge, huge issue for me.
Yeah.
And so when I'm sitting here looking at the readers, I'm totally ignoring Amazon because the Kindle doesn't let you do that, which I think is absolutely ridiculous.
That's something that's pushing me away too. Because part of the reason that I don't go to the library, I mean, part of it is I like to own my own books, but another part is I don't like having to go back and forth to return books.
Well, yeah, and you know, there is a selection issue. Public libraries, individual public libraries, depending on where you are, granted, you know, if you're going into a bigger city that has interlibrary loan and whatnot, you have much larger selections. But like here for me in my little local library, we've got, granted, their science fiction section just, you know, expanded slightly, but my resources are very limited. And it would be nice to have an e-reader that I could just log onto a website, download something, and then sit around and read it. And I think a lot of people are probably doing that. I mean, granted, a lot of people are probably also purchasing books, as, you know, proven to, at least to an extent, by how many ebooks Amazon is selling. And then Apple apparently has sold an absolutely astronomical amount of books themselves for the iPad, or even possibly the phone. It's a huge business. People are reading, which is the exciting part when it comes right down to it. And I'm hoping that they can, you know, solve the DRAM issues and the pricing issues and everything else, because I would love to have one. Absolutely love it. I want one for Christmas on one hand. On the other hand, I'm not at the point, the e-readers themselves are not at the point that I'm going to be satisfied with them. Early adopters might be, people who are tech gadget lovers.
Yeah.
Might be. I'm not. I expect a very high quality product immediately, a product that meets my specifications. And none of these, the big ones do. You've got, you know, the Kobo, Kindle, the Nook, and the Sony e-reader are the big ones.
I've played the Nook.
Right. And it's like, honestly,
I've seen the Nook in the original. And the first time it was released, I've seen the Nook when it was first released, and I've seen it most recently after a lot of its updates. And it is drastically better.
Right. Well, you know, and then the pricing has that they've all, I think, most of them have recently dropped their prices. The only ones that have not dropped their prices are Sony has not, because
they dropped their prices. It just wasn't as much as the other guys.
Yeah, but they're also releasing some new ones. You know, their company line is that they're not racing to the bottom, which is very snarky of them. but you know, I think part of that is because you have Barnes & Noble and Borders competing for market share in the brick and mortar department, not just the e-reader and e-book market. And because of that, they're having to drop their prices pretty much across the board, I imagine. And I think Barnes & Noble is getting bought out or something. Are they trying to sell themselves?
Yeah, it looks like they started to sell themselves due to the low sales. I'm not 100% sure what's going on with them.
Exactly. So, I mean, these companies are hurting, and you know, they're kind of desperate for the e-readers to do well. Mm-hmm. So they're both doing things to try to get the market share away from Amazon, which I honestly don't think that they're succeeding. And that's actually one of my worries, because meanwhile, you've got Amazon going, yeah, sorry, we're going to have proprietary software. You're not going to be able to use EPUB, which is, I think, the preferred format for libraries.
Yeah.
And if Amazon is literally, you know, they're not going to be the only e-reader on the market, period. But if they're the only ones selling the books,
that'll never happen.
It won't ever happen. And part of that is the fact that Google is coming out with their Google Edition and partnering up with
system.
Well, yeah, you think they're evil, but
no, it is evil what they're doing.
I know, but they're evil, all that jazz.
I know.
But meanwhile, it's pretty spiffy that they're coming out with this and they're partnering up with independent bookstores. So
they're just trying to save face.
Well, maybe, but, you know, it's still a huge boon to independent bookstores. As long as they've got a website, they're going to be able to sell their, you know, ebooks to their customers, potentially, probably not in store, but potentially in store. And that's a pretty big thing for independent bookstores. I mean, who are currently locked into the brick and mortar paper bound market, being able to jump onto the ebook wagon, which is steadily gaining market share, I think that's a pretty big deal. And it might be a really good thing for independent bookstores. I hope it is.
Yeah, but not so good for authors.
Well, yeah, but screw the author.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding.
Money flows to the author, period.
I know.
I will fight anybody over that. I will.
I don't think it has to go to the publisher, but it should go to the author in some way, shape, or form.
Authors deserve to be paid, which is also a problem I was thinking when you were talking about the library thing, is when it becomes that easy to borrow books from the library, what incentive will people have to actually buy books?
That's true.
And what do we do then? Because I know in Canada, for example, they have a system where authors are given royalties based on how many times their books are checked out while they're from the libraries, and it's paid through, I guess, the taxes. And so even books that are in libraries, they still get something from that.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah,
go
we don't
Canada.
Have that here. We don't have that here. But then again, we also don't care about our libraries, since we have to constantly defend it against people who want to change our policies.
Yeah, well, you know, United States has traditionally been fairly hostile against its public programs, but
despite all of the lovely stuff that says that actually the public programs, particularly library, are some of the most valuable things in society, but hey.
Of course they are. But really, I don't know. I mean, to an extent, you could say that it is a curse, because it might muddy the market, so to speak.
I mean, we're using a very, far-reaching binary. You know, there's savior, which is all sorts of lovely good and happiness, and then curse, which is really bad. And I think it's a mixed bag instead. It's just
everything's a mixed bag.
Well, but I mean, I think ebooks at where they're at right now, it is very much a mixed bag. The very clear mixed bag of really good points and really bad points that need to be addressed at some point along the line.
Agreed, but I think overall it will have a positive influence in the market. I mean, if you look at, you know, there's one of the articles that we read for this shows that there was a study done of 1,200 e-reader owners, and 40% of them said that they're now reading more than they did with print books, which is a rather gigantic leap all in all.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then broken down further, 58% did say, you know, that they read about the same as before, and 2% said they read less. But where was I going? I was going somewhere.
I don't know where you were going with that. I think that you said the most important number.
I said there that I did say the most important. I had more statistics somewhere, and I forgot about them.
No, but that's an important number, is if 40% of people are reading more.
Oh, that's the other thing, is considering the fact that, you know, in 2007, you had a report saying that half of people between 18 and 24 aren't reading any books for pleasure.
Yeah, but that's so...
You know, I don't know how realistic that quote was, and that's a pretty short range. That's only, you know, 18 to 24.
It's meaningless, though, because it's saying books, but that's But they're using it as a way to imply that they're not reading, which is total BS, because clearly
that's
they're reading.
True.
They're just not reading a choice medium.
Right. They're probably reading a whole bunch of articles online and
yeah.
whatnot. And they're probably comic books, given the age frame. But
yeah.
yeah.
But meanwhile, you know, you have a 40% leap for people who are e-readers. And I could see myself reading 40% more.
I don't
That's
know. Maybe I would.
But I could see myself reading more if I had access. I mean, like daily, I'm sitting here, you know, researching for this show going, oh, my God, this book is coming out. And oh, my God, this book is coming out. And I'm going, crap, I can't get all these books because I'm
poor.
A library user. Poor. And I'm not even poor, but. For me, it really isn't a priority. I don't want to spend $15 per book. And I could so easily, I'm an addict, so I could so easily spend $200 a month on books.
That's
and
it?
At least.
Oh,
that's
wow.
easily spent. It would be a slight stretch to spend more than that. And that would be very irresponsible of me. You know, I've got other responsibilities for my money.
Like what?
Like my kids' activities, food.
Oh, that's food. Overrated.
Food is nice, you know.
You can grow fungus on a book, and you can eat the fungus.
I could.
I think book purists are about to just kill me now.
Suppose no. You know what was actually interesting about this article is that it also mentioned the speed that people were reading things at.
Mm.
Which I hadn't really thought about it. Because on one hand, I'm going, oh my God, I would totally buy like a million books. But then I wouldn't be able to read any of them. Because apparently, iPad readers are 6.2% slower than they are when they read a real book. Print book.
Well, that's because it's the iPad.
Yeah, Kindle owners, which is arguably one of the best e-readers on the market right now, are 10.7% slower.
Yeah, but
which,
I wonder what are the demographics, though, of the users?
That's a good question, but presumably most people who are early adopters of technology tend to be...
Are old people.
No, they tend to be fairly young, actually, with good eyes. Okay, it's probably true anyway. Good eyes, well-educated, affluent. So,
are you sure that it's not just illiterate old people? I'm sorry, that's a low blow on old people. But I would be very curious, what are the demographics overall of people who use it?
I don't know, that would be an interesting group. I mean, that is actually one of my problems with e-readers and going, if we go too heavily towards e-books, then we're going to have a problem where more brick and mortar stores possibly close.
Or become coffee shops.
Libraries start focusing on their ebook content and not their brick and mortar selection.
This is true, but at the same time, libraries would just shift. They would shift the money they use to more social programs.
Right, but people still need books, and they still need newer books. And if they're not buying the print copies, then you have an entire population of people who can't afford e-readers not getting new books, which
could
potentially be a problem.
Let's clarify that. In 10 years, e-readers are going to be dirt cheap.
Yes, say that about a lot of things, though. And yeah, granted, they will
yeah.
be dirt cheap. I mean, you have e-readers on the market now that I think are only like $99 or something like that.
Yeah, in 10 years, they're going to be, you can get a nice good one for, I don't know, $30. You could get an e-reader for $30, guaranteed.
I don't think it'll go, it'll probably go that low, but they won't be very good.
Well, but no, but it doesn't really matter if they're, my cell phone's a piece of crap, but it works.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and I'm not going to spend $150 on a good cell phone.
But will the priority be there? I mean, that's the question. Will the priority in a lower income population be getting ebooks just because that's the only way to get new books?
Or are they going to be fair? I mean, that same population is a population that I don't think is reading enough anyway. So it's not, it's a priority of reading in general, not necessarily what the medium is.
That's very classist of you, but I see your point.
But it's not classist so much as it's a legitimate problem of people.
It is a legitimate
low income housing.
It's true.
And who are in lower income situations tend to also be people who grow up in situations where they don't grow up in a reading household.
Well, and if they're not in a reading household, then they might not be in a district that has decent libraries and decent school libraries or any school libraries. So
it's all tied. It's not so much a classist argument on my part. It's a classist issue in the
United
States.
It is a classist issue. Very much so. Yeah. So, you know, but I could see that potentially being an issue all in all. But I still think that this that e-readers are more of a it's not a savior. I mean, that really is a very strong binary to go with. But I think it'll be a positive influence on the publishing market.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance it could change reading in a significant way in terms of making more people as readers. But that's also based on what's happening now. Maybe people get tired of it. Maybe the iPad will destroy all that because the iPad does everything else. I don't know.
I won't buy Apple, so I doubt it.
I haven't bought an Apple product ever, so.
You know, actually, in terms of the changing reading, one of the things that was interesting in other statistics was the fact that, and this is probably within the margin of error, in my opinion, but among ebook buyers, 52% are men compared to, obviously, 48% of women, which is a reversal in print books. Women buy more print books than men.
And you know why?
Because romance novels.
No, because I can guarantee you most of or a good portion of the men who are buying ebooks are men who travel a lot. And so they don't carry books with them because
it's a pain in the butt.
Well, yeah, because they don't have room in their luggage. And now they can carry this one light little thing and they can have all the books they want anywhere. So most of those men are business oriented men.
I think it's an embarrassment issue. I think men, if they're carrying around a cool tech gadget, are okay with reading because before they had to look geeky, and now they look less geeky because they're cool and have a technology gadget as opposed to before they had a book, and that's not cool. But
no,
now they hide their shame.
That's a load of crap. Nothing to do with it.
I think it's totally legitimate. It's okay for women to read, which is interesting. Because 50 years ago,
for guys to read, it's just not.
50 years ago, it wasn't
okay
for women to read because then they get uppity.
Whatever. Anyway, it's crazy lady.
I am crazy. Yeah. But anyway, I'm sure we'll be revisiting this issue because you know, it's an expanding market, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Definitely. Yeah. This is a huge issue, so we're barely even touching the tip of the iceberg, I think.
No, probably not, but I wanted to at least touch on it in some way, shape, or form.
Besides, when this episode goes up, everything we said here will be obsolete, so.
I wanted to fondle the issue a little bit, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it'll be obsolete, just like, you know, the iPad, when the new iPad comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, we'll definitely come back to this again in the future. For now, this is our very cursory, terrible attempt to talk about it, but in which we've probably said like 18 things wrong and somebody can critique us. But in any case, I think we're at least 38% correct.
At the very least.
At the very least. So we're going to come back with our reading and writing section and our question of the week, which actually should be a very fun question because it's going to involve a poll instead of just a normal question. So, yeah. So we'll be right back. And we're back with our reading and writing section. First up, I'm going to go because I don't have as many books as Jen has. She's got 10,000 that she borrowed from the library. So I am reading The Reapers Are the Angels by Alden Bell. It's a new zombie novel, although it was described to me as literary zombie novel. And so I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm reading a bunch of Derrida, Jacques Derrida. I'm reading Points, which actually he talks about the drugs, which is actually very fun.
That's exciting.
Yeah, actually, he's got really interesting ideas about drugs, but I'll save you guys all the crazy philosophy. So
that's basically what I'm reading and writing. Not doing so much of it this week. It's not working.
Although we are supposed to be occasionally at least discussing our, you know, epistolary robot novel. But
yes, that we haven't even started.
we're in talks at least, so that's yes. That's progress.
Yes, with an imaginary publisher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you want to buy our novel that hasn't even been written yet, but at least we've named the characters.
Bill
let
and
us
Ted.
Know.
It's Bill and Ted's Excellent Robotic Adventure.
Oh yeah. All right. So what am I reading?
Yes, what are you reading?
I won't tell you the whole list of things that I just got at the library because it's a long list. But I am reading currently because I never quite finished the 60 Days and Counting by Kim Stanley Robinson, the last book in his climate change series. So I'm finishing that up. Meanwhile, I am on the final book of the Xenogenesis trilogy and really enjoying that.
No, it's awesome.
And it's actually, you know, nicely segued into, I found, yes, my local library. I found Nalo Hopkinson's The
yes.
Salt Road. And yeah, that's freaking fantastic. I'm going to try to, you know, start reading her books before the Eden conference that Duke and I are attending.
Yep.
Although Duke's the only one that legitimately should be going.
Because I'm presenting. Yeah.
I'm just going to hold his hand.
Thanks.
But Nalo is going to be there, and so I felt like I should read some of her books. No, and Duke has told me really good things about it, and I've already read the first third of the book, and I'm loving it. So yeah, that's what I'm reading, and obviously I'm not writing anything because we're in talks.
Yes, yes, yes.
Sure.
With the imaginary James Cameron to make the movie.
Gonna be epic.
I know. In 3D.
As long as Peter Berg doesn't direct it, Rihanna doesn't star in it, I think we'll be okay.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the question of the week, actually. This is a perfect segue. Our question of the week is, and there will be a poll which we'll put up on the site. It'll either be in the post or to be on the sidebar, wherever I can get it to fit. The question is, do you think Rihanna will ruin the Battleship movie? It'll be yes or no. You can vote on the poll, or you can email us at skiffmefanti@gmail.com. Send a voicemail at 206-203-1686. Or leave a comment on our WordPress page at skiffyandfanti.wordpress.com. And then finally, you can send us a Twitter message, which is really easy to do, since all you have to do is say yes or no, so you barely even have to type. at twitter.com/skiffyandfanti. So those are ways you can contest, and of course we'd love to hear from you about anything else, anything about the show or whatever you want to send us a message about. Please send us a message.
If you want to propose marriage to either one of us, that's also acceptable, although I am married, so that might be an issue.
I know, a polygamy is legal where you live.
Not yet.
Oh
we're getting there though. Once the gays can marry, then.
It's just a slippery slope.
Obviously. Yes.
Yeah.
Good old California. So, yeah. and we will hopefully see you all next. Well, hear from you all. I don't know. What are we doing? We'll talk to you all next week.
Yeah, we'll talk to you, the few of you that are still listening to this show.
Yep, and we have another exciting episode planned for you guys. So,
yes, next week should be awesome, by the way. It will
be
awesome sauce. And the episode after that is going to be even more awesome.
It is?
Yeah, but you don't know what's happening yet.
Wow.
But I do.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to the surprise.
It involves my new favorite thing, so.
Very excellent. All right, everybody have a fantastic week.
Yep. Take care.
Autobots, roll out!